Welcome back, Seahawks fans, to the newest episode of the Seahawks Nest podcast. I'm your host, Nathan Sano, joined, as always, by the Mad Max to my Furiosa. It's Kevin Garber. Kevin, how you doing?
I would say, but I can't.
Oh, all right.
That's Mad Max.
True. That's true. You're angry, though. That's bait. Okay, let's start off with this, okay? I felt like I had really just a gift. I had a gift, and it was that I was a very good Pete Carroll translator. You know, I just had the gift. I could that guy could say something and I knew exactly what he meant by it. And now we have to learn the new coach translation. You know, you have to learn what is the new coach when he talks, when he speaks, what does he mean?
And also you have to make sure you don't get triggered by something, because if you're like, oh, this person, they got kind of a toe thing, and I'm like, oh God, they died. And I'm like, wait, no, it's not Pete.
Mike McDonald is very direct. he does not play the coach speak game too much. He was asked about Geno Smith today, or this last week, and he said Geno's the starting quarterback. He didn't respond with like a political answer or say like, oh, we're always competing, or say like there was no trend. You didn't need the decoder ring to figure out what Mike McDonald meant. He said Geno's the starter. He made that clear, and Sam Howell is the backup. And so, yeah, there you go. That's the state of the current Seahawks quarterbacks.
My favorite thing about that is what you also learned then is he basically was like, I haven't really gotten a chance to scout Geno the way I want to in building, is basically what he was saying the previous time when he's like, I don't know who's the starter.
Yeah.
Like, you're really getting to see. Yeah, it's going to be one of those things.
I talked to him once. He's the starter. It's like, oh, all right. Well, so he's the starter the whole time. Okay. Sam Howell comes into as the backup. John Schneider was interviewed on Wyman and Bob. He said, Sam's a football player. I think that's the best way to describe it. Guess what? All of them are football players.
I don't know. Some of them, I would argue, might not be football players.
Come on, dude. They're all football players. But he's a quarterback. But he's really a football player. That's what I love about him. What is that? Then the next line. You ready for the next thing he said? He's just a football player. And I keep going back to that. But that's a legit thing. This past year, he threw it over 40 times in 8 games. He threw it 50 times in 2 games. So, you know, it was rough sledding for him this past year at the Commanders. Just calling a guy a football player over and over, all NFL
feels
players.
Like, feels like a backhanded compliment.
All NFL players are football players. He should have gone with the hammer thing. He should have like brought that back up or something. Just like, I get what he's trying to say. He's trying to say like, oh, this is a football guy. He's a dirtbag. He only eats chicken strips and I love him for it. But the just calling him a football player and over does not, they're all football. even the guys that don't seem to like football are football
players. They still play football.
Antonio Brown is still a football player. Okay. That's CTESPN, man. He's on that. I don't know what intern he hired to run his Twitter, but that guy is on like an all-time generational run right now, where it's just one in a billion. The CTESPN thing, I love it.
You know what? Like, I actually feel bad about that, because of all the things to waste your good choice on, this is not a man who makes a lot of good choices, and no, he used it on that.
I mean, between him and everyone else, like. It really gained a lot of respect for their head coach over there, just being able to bottle all that stuff.
Yeah, Mike Tomlin, right. Just being able to handle it. It's that whole Pete thing where everyone went insane after they left Pete. You're like, man, Pete was really holding together the culture of this team.
Okay, so the quarterback situation, though, pretty settled. We got Geno at 1, Howell at 2. We're gonna move forward with that. Johnson, it did not affect our ability to draft a quarterback. Yeah, if Caleb Williams is available at 16, we're picking him. I get it, John. But we're probably not drafting a quarterback. It would have to be a situation like that, where one of the top 3 guys inexplicably slides, that maybe this Drake May as the 4th quarterback thing becomes real, and Drake May is available at 10. And, you know, instead of letting I don't know, the Vikings jump up there and get him, we're like, hey, let's get aggressive and go get Drake May. Sure, good. I'm into it. John's not saying, like, he's not closing the door on drafting a quarterback, but, like, it's only open a crack.
if the dumbest thing in the world happens, if everyone just is like, Drake May, he's so white, there's no way he's fast, and then he falls to 16, then I guess we're taking Drake May.
Did you see, but, like, Drake May, when he was like, they were like, build the perfect quarterback, and then he just kept saying, like, I don't know, man. I was like, this is not the perfect quarterback. The running ability, he was like Josh Allen. And I'm like, you don't say Lamar Jackson in this situation? You're building the perfect quarterback, Drake. Okay, anyway. We signed Kayvon Wallace. So now we are like pretty set at safety, feels like. John said he didn't expect to be able to get both of those guys at safety, but he did. So good job by him, I guess. I don't really have a lot to say. Kayvon Wallace is... all these guys are kind of the same. They're really good special teamers, and they're at like average replacement level starters where like they're not hurting the team, but they're definitely not helping that much to the point where I'm like, okay, yeah, we just gotta load up some stars. We just gotta hit on a couple of these draft picks, find a star to put next to these guys, because these guys are solid. They're not bad. We're not rolling out there. There's only one position now I feel like we're like just not set at.
One thing I'll say about Kayvon Wallace that's kind of nice is he does have more snaps at free safety, which I think the other two guys are a little more primarily box. So if the other guys are like, you know, somewhere between 50 and 60% box, he's between like 50 and 60% free. And so he came in the league kind of as almost like a slot safety was what people thought he was going to play. So that kind of gives us another way that we can flex. So we have three guys that can come in if Jarek Reed is not ready to contribute this year. Yeah, I think it's a nice spot to be in. I agree. This is a really high floor signing. We have three like really high floor safeties. The odds of us just being straight up incompetent there is really low. There are also three pretty good tackling safeties, which, you know, as Nino would tell you, you don't want your safeties getting all your tackles. But at the same point in time, if someone gets back there, you want somebody who can make the stop in the open field.
Yeah, so I decided to look it up because you're talking about it. Jenkins went 489 in the box, 188 in the slot, 335 at free. Whereas Kayvon Wallace, there's a lot. Did you know there's a lot of people in the NFL with the last name Wallace?
Kayvon Wallace went 109 in the box and 354 in the free.
326 box, 115 slot, 349. So it's just like 60-40 the other way and 60-40 the other way. Honestly, feels like they're both flexible pieces too, which might complement each other quite nicely. Okay.
Yep.
Jonathan Hankin. Also, it lets us really like, we don't need another safety. We have three safeties that can kind of do a little of everything. If we leave the draft without a safety, it's not a disaster because they can kind of back each other up. And we still have Jarek Reed, who we all know I love very much. Okay, Jonathan Hankins, IDL, tell me about him.
He's still very large. Yeah. Turns out that as he's gotten older, he hasn't gotten less large. He has gotten less mobile, and that's shown up in the last few years where I think he's lost some of his lateral agility, which makes his kind of run-stopping ability a little less than it was. But also he was playing in a lot lighter fronts than he was at the beginning of his career. We're bringing him back to just kind of be a really solid floor at nose tackle. If Cam Young isn't ready to take a bigger slice of the pie, Miles, who's the guy that we keep getting off the practice squad?
Miles Adams.
If this squeezes out Miles Adams snaps, like he's just kind of here to eat up. He's here to provide a floor for the basement level snaps in our D-line rotation. I think that's fine.
He's not going to be what he was in the first 5 years of his career. You know, when he got 8 sacks and 6 sacks in 2014 and 2016, I think people look back at that and they're like, oh my gosh, maybe. But our defensive coordinator knows him really well. He was in Dallas last year. I think it's a nice solid depth signing. Get an older player in here. That way, you know, we don't run Jaren Reed into the ground like we did last year, where it felt like Jaren Reed was our best defensive player at the beginning of the year. And by the end of the year, he was tired. So like hopefully that this can prevent some of that from happening. Tremaine Antrim, our starting left guard. What do you think, Kevin?
He is a depth right guard. Like it's one of those. I don't mind him coming in and being the backup guard. He primarily plays on the right side. He could probably play the right or the left side. He gets hurt a lot. You did an initial comp to Beefy Boy Haynes, and I think that's a decent comp, where he's a big dude who can come in and back up both guard positions. It helps raise the floor. Now we don't need to go acquire two guards in the draft. If we can get a guy who can start at left guard, then we have a starting offensive line. But if we rolled in with Tremaine Ankrum and Anthony Bradford with no competition at guard, I would be concerned.
Yeah, I mean, he's played a grand total of like 101 NFL snaps And I went to the Rams board. You know, this is what I do when we get a player I don't know anything about, like our backup tight end. When I went to the Patriots board, everyone was like, yeah, this guy rules. And I'm like, yes, this is a good signing. Then he will be a good backup tight end.
So you checked in with both the Rams fans. What do we find out?
When I checked in the Rams fans, first thing I noticed was, wow, their subreddit has 3 times more people than us and one half of the active people online right now. That's crazy. But the second thing I noticed was that they were like, oh, yeah, I mean, when he's on the field, he's pretty solid, but he's you know, hurt. And they said, you know, I like him better than Jonathan Noteboom, which is like not a super high bar to
that's cross. On the he's a football player level of compliment right there.
I like him better than Joe Noteboom is not like a huge compliment, but Noteboom has played a lot more. I would probably rather have Noteboom, to be honest with you, just because of the playing time thing.
Best ability is availability,
but yeah, I'm, you know what, we need guards. We probably need 2 more still. So here we go. That we got one down.
Also cut him for free. So if we end up just getting 2 guards that are better than him, he might just be the last person cut, and that's fine too.
Free agency note, that Baker is the will linebacker and Dodson is the middle linebacker. I probably would have thought it was the opposite way, so it was mildly surprising, but not. This doesn't do anything for doesn't matter that much to me.
Yeah, and in this defense, I don't know that there's that huge of a difference between them, really, like as far as how they're deployed. Because it's more like we have 2 inside linebackers, so.
Yeah, there's going to be 2 inside linebackers on the field all the time. That's the defense. All right, Seahawks top 30 visits so far. You ready? So we got Tyrese Knight, UTEP linebacker. Did you scout this guy?
I couldn't get good tape on him at the time.
I got Senior Bowl stuff. That's it. But he did compete well at the Senior Bowl, did a really good job, ran a 4.63 at the combine, 21 bench reps. Basically, the problem with him is that people aren't sure what position he plays in the league. Oh, and before you say like, oh, top 30 visits, do these really matter? Last year, we did top 30 visits with Devin Witherspoon, Jarek Reed, and Anthony Bradford. It definitely is a hint for us, at least in our process. Some teams it's not, but for us it's definitely these are guys we're looking
at. Schneider likes to be able to talk to people before he drafts them. Like you can just tell that, and if you kind of have been following the franchise for a while, that matches his personality.
Yep. So Tyrese Knight is a linebacker that we're keeping our eye on, probably kind of be round 5, 6, 7 kind of guy, but yep, something that we can definitely see. He's been a really fast rising prospect. And one thing I'll say is that last week I talked about like just kind of generally boxes getting lighter, guys getting smaller in these positions. He's a legit 240 pound linebacker, which is nice. That's kind of on the bigger side of what we're seeing now. And I'm not saying that like you can't succeed if you're smaller, like, but these tight ends are getting smaller. The linebackers are getting smaller. Eventually there's going to be like a pendulum swing back where power running game is actually good. That's kind of what I'm hinting at when I say like we keep seeing these lighter and lighter prospects at some of these positions, and eventually it's like, hey, these guys that are big are actually good again because they can just push around these smaller guys. I don't think we're quite there yet, and the rules changes do favor speed, so I don't know, maybe on balance it will balance out, but we're gonna see teams try. I think the Rams are trying to get real big. I think the Chargers are gonna try to get real big and play like power football, so we'll see how those teams
Jets do next seem year. To be angling in that direction too. There's a few
teams that look like they're ready to play some power football and rely on their defense and get a little bigger, and so we'll see if that pendulum swing is going back the other way or if it's just maybe a kind of anomaly
somewhere. Okay. Pete just shed a single tear.
Yeah, I know, he's like, I did right when I left. John Reese Plumlee, the quarterback for UCF. This is like
an Ole Miss transfer. Interesting guy. He played baseball. He was a starter on the Ole Miss baseball team. Get ready for that stat 1,000 times if he ever ends up playing. He's more of a runner than a passer.
It's weird. I don't know, man. He has a hose, as John likes to say.
He's got an arm,
but like the tape is not very supportive of him being like an awesome thrower of the football. Like,
yeah, he can kind of like, he a lot of half field reads, a lot of simplifying the offense for him that tells you that he's had a lot of starting experience, but
he played SEC
quarterback.
Played SEC football as a freshman. I think this is like the kind of guy you bring in on the practice squad as a UDFA, and yep. he's and like that's what we're angling for here. It's like if we don't find a quarterback we actually like, this is probably the third quarterback right here, is we're developing this guy in the practice squad and seeing if there's anything there. Nothing wrong with that. Last one, Debo Jr. Malachi Corley came in, Kevin, for a little run. What do you think about that?
I like Malachi Corley. I don't know. It's hard because Debo Samuel is the comp that you want to make because of what he does. But like that's such a difficult comp. I'll give a different comp, which is Golden Tate. He looks like a guy who played running back and then was moved to receiver because he was just the most dynamic playmaker on the team. And you know what he does? He goes out and makes plays dynamically. I don't know how else to say it.
More of a tackle breaker than a burner. Like, that's why I think people compare him to Debo. It's like he goes out there and he breaks a bunch of tackles instead of like just running past guys. And
really good short area quickness. Really, really good shake. Yeah.
And you gotta get him the ball kind of in a little space, and then he's just gonna make guys miss, which is kind of fun. And also run over guys. He's hard to tackle just in general. But also it's Western Kentucky tape. So you have to like balance it out, but he's done good at the Senior Bowl. He's done good at the, you know what I mean? Like
when you watch Western Kentucky's games against better teams, the skills transferred. Like when they were playing against better opponents, he still was just really difficult to bring down. At the end of the day, like 5'11", 215, he is a running back basically. Like he's got that build and he plays like it.
Yeah. So, all right. Last thing. In Osborne, Kansas City, they have decided to make a company has decided to make a branded milk product called Niner's Tears. And they do ship nationwide. So if you want a bottle of Niner's Tears, this is kind of a friend of enemy of my enemy is my friend situation. But yeah, it's pretty cool.
Also, if you want a bottle of Niner's Tears, all you have to do is mention that you think their quarterback is overrated and then hold a bottle out.
And just say, oh, yeah, I don't think you would have made the Super Bowl if Brock Purdy didn't get hurt, and just wait. Okay, this week we're going into the trenches, Kevin. We're heading into the trenches for some defensive linemen. I'm going to start with edge, actually, because I think edge is a little easier and will take us less time. So I'm going to start with edge. I think there's a clear top three, and then I'm curious what order you have them in, because the top three guys all bring – slightly different things to the table. They're all very interesting for different reasons. And I think it's kind of a choose your own narrative / adventure. So let's start with number one. For number one, for me, I still have to go with Dallas Turner. 21 years old, crazy, crazy combine stuff already. I'm sure his pro day will continue to provide us. 4.46,
40 yard, 40 and a half inch vertical. Yeah, the dude's crazy athletic.
In addition to, like, you know, he's just an impressive athlete. He has like a plan when he pass rushes, which is like nice to see. A guy that's 21 years old already has like a pass rush plan. I just see him as a future like Cliff Avril level 11 sack pass rush maven that's going to continue to grow. If he gets bigger, the ceiling is even higher. But it's just hard to project if he will be able to gain weight in a way that lets him keep that explosiveness. And even if he doesn't, he's still going to be useful as like a high level, you know, speed rusher, pass rush guy that can really make thing. I think he's awesome. I also think he can you know, go out in the flat and not embarrass himself, which is something that is going to be asked of him probably. And that is nice as well. So my number one was Dallas Turner. Did you go there as well? Or did you go in a different direction?
I went Dallas Turner as well because I think he has the highest ceiling. And when I'm drafting in the top 20, ceiling comes into play big time for me. He reminds me kind of Brian Burns coming out, where he's got this kind of lean, angular body. He's got that really good ankle flexion and everything so that he can bend and turn the corner really well. I think he's probably the best bender out of the high-level pass rushers in this draft. His arms are over 34 inches, and you can really see that come into play because he stacks and sheds a lot better than I would expect based on the size. And he has 2 years of productivity for Alabama. Having 2 years of productivity in your age 21 season in the NFL or in the SEC, that's a really good sign for moving forward.
Yeah, I'm a big fan. I think that the sky, you said, the sky is the limit. All right, now we go to two guys who came back as fifth-year seniors, and I think one really improved his stock, and one's really – his stock probably went down a little bit from it. So let's go number two here. I'm going to go with Jared Verse. Did you go with Jared Verse or did you go the other way?
We are lockstep, my friend.
Okay. All right. It's close, though. I will say the injuries scare me with Latu.
The top three to me are all top 20 players.
Yes, they're locked in. They're good.
Latu, it depends, like you said, on the injury report. And also what exactly you want your defense to do. I think Jared Verse just has such a high floor as guy who comes in and gets 8 to 10 sacks and plays well against the run.
Yeah, he got clocked at 21.14 miles per hour running in a game. And he's just an effort guy, man. He's explosive, but he's like super high effort. He's trying super hard. He definitely has a little hammer by his name. I guarantee it. Like this guy
It's FSU, so it's a little tomahawk.
Oh no. But he's good athleticism. He has good size and speed. I mean, I thought that his three cone would pop harder. 7.31 is not great, which is why he would have been first for me going into like going into the process, but he worked his way down to 2 with that kind of a bad three cone. Not that that makes him a bad athlete. The bench is good. The broad is good. The vert is fine. 10-yard split.
It says something about how close together these players are, where like those are the things you're doing to separate them. You're like, Verse has the really heavy hands, and I know that he can do this, where Latu is reliant on this technique thing that might not translate against NFL offensive tackles, when the combine score was better for Dallas. And you're like, okay, that's how I'm separating these two guys. Would you like to get them at 16? I'll take any of them.
Would you say like four or five of there's like 4 or 5 players that have an opportunity to be the first defensive player off the board, and Verse is one of them. Like there's nothing wrong with that. I do not think Latu will be the first defensive player off the board. The next guy, I could see why someone would rank him higher, but I'm just going to say, I don't think he could be the first defensive player off the board, but Turner could, I think Verse could. And I think you could see a cornerback or maybe a couple of these interior guys we're about to talk about could be the first guy off the board as well. So this is a really, really good defensive football player. If he's available at 16, I think the Seahawks should run, not walk. Same with maybe the next guy. Let's go to Latu, Kevin. What do you like about him?
He just has really polished technique. He looks like a veteran pass rusher where he has a pass rush plan. He has counters. He has everything set up. His leverage is a little bit too high against the run. He could be a little too far upright. And against the best offensive tackles he faced, he had a little bit of trouble because he's not super long. He has sub 33 inch arms, which can get you in some trouble against offensive linemen. But he kind of always just gets pressure because he's relentless and he has a plan. He has a counter. He has a counter to the counter. And so the offensive tackle can't let up for half a second. If he lets up for half a second, then he's just making a beeline to the quarterback. And so for that reason, he just seems like a guy who's going to be productive.
I like that he can line up inside and outside. I like that he could play in a 3-4 or 4-3. Mm-hmm. I think that this is the most flexible player of the three that we've talked about.
He's the most natural 4-3 left end out of the three top guys too. I would agree with that.
And I mean like he made problems for guards in the tape. Mm-hmm. So like I really like the idea of like, you know, hey, if you want flexibility, if you want a guy you can move around, which is going to matter, which matters to our defense that we're going to play, this might be the guy. And so yeah, the scary thing is bad injury history and, you know,
He medically retired from UW with a neck injury, sat out for an entire year, and then was doing well enough that he got cleared by UCLA doctors to play.
Which UCLA has the best
red flag. That's a big injury red flag.
UCLA has like the best medical staff too. Like people just hype it up. Like this is the best medical staff in college. So like the fact that they were working with him, trying to get him back, help him get back, and got him back to this level, it's all like a nice. It's a great story. All right, number four. I think so. For me, there's a tier break, and then there's a guy alone in the next tier. Would you agree with that?
Or
do you think
the exact same situation. Okay. Do we have the same guy alone?
Is it Chop? Is it Chop Robinson? All right. For me, it's Chop Robinson. I think I just see the upside here. He plays with such high energy.
He's an athlete.
He is really, really good. He was on Feldman's Freaks list. You know, he's 6'3", 6'54". He ran a 4.47 in their offseason. Then he went to the combine and ran a 4.48 and was like, yeah, I'm doubling down. I'm ready. 97th percentile in the 10-yard split, 98th percentile in the broad jump. This guy's a mover and he tries hard. He's just such a high motor player. He has not developed fully his football skills, you know, like he just needs He needs refinement. He needs more
seasoning. He can't set an edge. He doesn't know what to do with double teams. He doesn't have gap discipline.
His hand
technique is lacking big time.
He's 21 years old. He's 21 years old, and he already broke out, though. So before we doubt him too much, like
he already broke out. Like, he had a 5-sack season. Like, this last season, his productivity was down considerably.
Yeah.
But in 2022, he had almost 50 pressures and 5 sacks. That's really good.
Yeah, and he was like 19 years old too when he did it. So chop for me is like I get it. If you bring him in, like, he is the kind of player though that you're gonna need to develop. I think some team's gonna talk themselves into him as a late first rounder, like a guy you take or in the low 20s, you know, somewhere around there.
I think there's a good chance he is the fourth edge rusher off the board. He is not my fourth edge rusher because he reminds me too much of Vic Beasley, and that scares me.
Okay, what's your fourth guy then?
My fourth guy is Chris Braswell out of Alabama.
Okay, nice. I like it.
So 6'3", 250, 33-inch arms, has a really good size, weight, speed profile for a 3-4 edge. He just kind of naturally fits in that. He uses his length really well to shed, and it makes him better against the run than you would necessarily expect. He sets the edge really well for his size. He just kind of has natural strength that makes you think, oh, this guy's going to come in at like 265, and he weighed in at 251. His technique's still a little bit raw and inconsistent. Like, his hands and feet don't always work together, and he doesn't have the bend that the really high-end guys do. He's a little stiff in the hips, which means that he kind of tends to have to round off his path as opposed to being able to get that, like, quick path to the quarterback, which is what kind of takes him out of a round one guy to me.
So for me, the tape is great, but when he like scored lower on the like the vert and the broad, and it kind of matched what I thought, which is like this guy is not like a bursty athlete, I was like, maybe not. So I kind of waiting to see how he does at the pro day, and then I have him just out of the top 5.
I think he's good. Fair.
I'm kind of waiting to see.
You have Chop Robinson because he tested really well, but the tape isn't as good. And I have Braswell because the tape is good, but he didn't test as well. And I think both of those are very defensible positions. Yeah. And both of them are top 50 players.
Yeah, so I went with a bigger guy as my number 5.
Oh, do we have the same number 5?
Is it Darius Robinson?
No. Oh, Darius Robinson is, I put him on interior defensive lineman.
Oh, okay, yeah. I was going to say, this is like a scheme flexible, like 4-3 end or like 3-4 DE kind of player. But he's huge, but he moves really good especially for how big he is. And like, if you're going to be 6'5", 285 and vert 35 inches, nice job.
Right. Dude,
that's crazy. Dan,
people want to pick on his 4.95 three cone or 4.95 40 yard. 40. I could not care less about this man's 40 yard dash. When on earth am I going to need Darius Robinson running a 40 yard dash that I care? No,
he's just going to push. He just pushes people around a little bit, which I like.
His lateral quickness is good. I think his three cone and shuttle would be very respectable if he did them.
Yeah, that's the thing is he going to do him at his pro day or what? I had him 5th on my edge rankings because you're in a weird spot here where like guys are position flexible. So did you go, can I try to guess?
Yep.
Marshawn Nyland?
Marshawn Nyland.
I like Marshawn
Nyland. That is my number 5.
7.023 cone, dude. That's like a, there's a very strong relationship between if you three cone under 7.1, you're going to do something in the NFL. All the late defensive ends you remember, like the guy who's the guy for the Raiders?
Max Crosby
and stuff. Like those guys all were like three cone mavens. It's
you know the tape so that he reminds me of the most.
Is it Max Crosby? I don't know.
Frank Clark.
Oh yeah, okay. I can.
He looks like Frank Clark on tape. I realize he's playing for Western Michigan, which is a very different Michigan, but he's got really good size, length, and athleticism. He plays with some nasty. Like there are times where his finish is like, oh man, this guy said something about his mom in the huddle. I'm pretty sure. Like he needs technique. His lane discipline isn't very good. He'll kind of sell out for the sack and give up lane discipline to like running quarterbacks. Like, and those are all like really coachable things. He has a bull rush and a swim. He's extremely active, high motor.
Power game. Like this guy tries to run people over. It's fun.
He dominated lesser competition, which is what you want to see.
All right, so I'm guessing he's going to show up on this next list for you and not be on it for me. No, the other guy. That's the other guy. Never mind. Okay, so here we go.
Darius Robinson. Yeah.
All right, number one here. This is hard. I have two guys very close. I'm going to let you pick first.
Okay, my number one guy for interior defensive line is Jerzon Newton out of Illinois.
I also want Jerzon Newton.
I like Jerzon Newton. He's a little bit bigger, and I feel like he was the guy at Illinois. Whereas I feel like Byron Murphy had more talent around him, which made up for some of the shortcomings. Mm-hmm. He's got adequate size. His arms are a little short. They're 32 3/8 inches. But he's got really quick hands. He uses them really well.
By the way, everyone calls this guy Johnny. Did you know that?
Yes.
Yeah, everyone calls him Johnny Newton, but Jurjan is like a cool name. I don't know why you'd want to be Johnny.
I'm wondering if it was like Johnny and then he went to his actual name, but like, you know, sometimes announcers are kind of slow to roll to that.
Like the guy for the Ravens. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like he's like, we're kind of projecting a bit. Here's the thing about Newton is that he hasn't done any of the athletic testing, right? Like he had
a foot injury, so he's wasn't working out.
So it's like I need to see that stuff before I'm confident either way, because he's a little short on the short end. His hands are small. His wingspan is 5th percentile for IDL. Like I suspect that he will have really good explosive numbers, but like I could easily see moving him down this list pretty significantly if it comes out, you know, because he is just kind of, you know, like you said, he's like adequate size, but not like great size. So he needs to like kind of blow up testing numbers.
Yeah, the testing matters. So for Jurjan Newton and for Byron Murphy II, which I assume is both of our number two guy.
Yeah, correct.
My comp for both of them is Grady Jarrett, with the same exact caveat of if they can develop in their ability to play against the run the way that Grady Jarrett developed his ability to play against the run, instead of just being a lightning quick three tech, then they're a complete package top end of the league defensive lineman. But like, I really need to see them being able to do that in the NFL. And that's something you can't see till they get there.
Do you know what I feel like I like about Byron Murphy is it felt like he always knew what the opposing play was. Like I just like every decision he made,
read really well.
Every decision he made was like so good. And there's a lot of guys like, I'll go back to another guy like Latu, where it's like sometimes it's like, dude, do you even know what's going on this play? Like you're way in the wrong spot. Like if you read this play better, you could. This guy, it just always knew what to do. But his athletic testing wasn't insane. It was pretty, you know, middle of the road. And so I think like, yeah, he's good, solid end of the first round IDL, between 20 and 32. Nice player. I'd like to see it. Someone you could really talk yourself into him though, because the tape is nice, especially because I think a lot of people went to that tape thinking, I'm going to watch Tavondre Sweat. He's 370 pounds. This will be a blast. And then you watch it and you're like, whoa, who's this other guy? He's like blowing up every play.
Well, the other thing with Byron Murphy is I feel like they put him at nose quite a bit, and he did struggle sometimes with that. In the NFL, if he just has to be like a one-gapping three tech, he's going to be such a good interior pass rusher in that exact role. So if you're running a four-man line and you want a penetrating three tech, he really is ideal for that. And I could see him going in the top 20 to a team that wanted him for exactly that.
Yeah. All right. Who's number three?
So my number three is Darius Robinson, who we already talked about.
Yeah. Give me more though.
So I think that I like him as a 3-4 D end or a 4-3-3 tech. But for either of those, I'd like him to add maybe another like 10 pounds of good weight, because he is already a little bit stiff hipped for an outside pass rusher. And I don't really think that his change of direction skills are going to get any better for that. So I think getting just a little bit more power to be able to stand up to like setting the edge, that type of thing, is going to be the step to making him like an every down lineman.
Yeah. Okay. I went number three. Okay. At this point, I was really like trying to think which of these guys, like I wanted guys that kind of, I don't know. I went with Chris Jenkins.
Chris Jenkins is my number four. Darius Robinson, he'd be my three also.
Yeah. I think he's just, he lacks ideal size.
He's going
size,
to stop the run. He just is.
He's just knows how to play football. His dad was a four-time Pro Bowler. Like this guy has just been around the game, and you can tell that he knows what to do. It just reminds me of some of those players where you just know Chris Jenkins probably is never going to have more than like 5 sacks.
Yes.
He's
put on 20 pounds of good weight at Michigan in 3 years. And I think he would probably put on another like 10 to 20 pounds of good weight in the league. And he's just going to be like a really stout run stopping interior defensive lineman.
All right, hit me with your number five, Kevin.
Devondre Sweat.
Devondre Sweat. He's big. He's
huge.
He's so big.
And he moves really well for his size, because his size is the earth.
You can't teach size like this. I had him at number four, so I'm right there with you. You cannot teach a guy to be this big. He's too
and he
big.
Played a big snap count for being his size. Like a lot of those guys, you're like, oh, it's a conditioning concern. And you look and they play like 300 snaps a season or 200 snaps a season in college. This dude is playing 500 snaps a season in college.
And he ran the 40 at the combine, Kevin. If you're 366 pounds, you don't need to run the 40, but he did it anyway.
And he's 5'27" is respectable so cool. For being the earth.
Yeah.
Like there are guys who are like 320 that are running it like 5'2". This guy's out there. Tom Brady wishes he had that 40 time at the combine.
I mean, you just like have to double team him. That's the thing I think I like about Devondre Sweat, and maybe why I should probably have put him at third, is like you just don't have a choice. Because if you don't double team him, he's going to overpower the guy in front of him. It's just going to happen. The only problem with Devondre Sweat is that he needs to get into the play faster. I think if he did, like, it feels like he starts a little slow, you know, like he's like, maybe
yeah, his first step quickness isn't perfect,
or he's just overthinking or something. I don't know. But the upside here is like literally Vita Vea. So yeah, it's pretty sweet. All right. I get to do one more. Let's go. I don't know. I had like three guys written down for number five, and I'm not really.
I've got like two classifications of guys that I'd be very happy to talk about.
Let's do Rook or Horror.
Aurora.
Sure. Just needs more seasoning. That's like a guy who is like on the maybe could be good, but just needs like to play more.
He reminds me of Sheldon Richardson, where he's like a very linear athlete, but he has a good body for it, and he's another one of those ideal fits for a 3-4 D end.
High potential too. Like the potential is high here. It's just he has not put it together. And honestly, if you're scared of Clemson defensive linemen at this point, I don't blame you. That's probably why I have as low as I do. So all right, let's do just in this group, Kevin, IDLs and edges. Who are some guys that might show up in the later days that you think like, hey, these are guys that are cool, and I'll just throw in a couple as well.
On the classification with Rook, I've got four dudes that I scouted that I think are just that ideal body type for that DN/DT not nose tackle in a 3-4. So guys that could play where Jaren Reed does, guys that could play where Jones does, and Justin Boigbe out of Alabama. Really versatile, really good first step. I like how he moves for his size. He doesn't have the lateral agility you want in a 4-3 edge to like rush the passer, but in a 3-4 as like a pocket pusher and a guy that can get past someone is good. Just like motor always running, always gets a lot of push against his guy. He can handle double teams. He's just a really nice fit for our style of defense, and I think he'll be like a late round 3, early round 4 guy.
All right, Brandon Fisk, great RAS score 9.88, right? Same basically as Rook or Horror. I can't say these names, but they're very similar players to me, which is why I was like, I have three names written down, and they're all kind of the same to me.
Similar level, terrible fit for our defense.
You think he's not going to play D?
31-inch arms. I just feel like he could not handle a double team at all. He is a straight up penetrating 3-tech. But in that role for that type of defense, really good fit if you want a guy with a first step that can just make problems.
Yep. All right. Well, give me another one.
Dwayne Carter out of Duke reminds me a lot of Jaren Reed, where he just has good size, good length, solid athlete, not like super special. The guy just really knows how to play defense. He's a 3-time team captain for Duke. He was kind of just the guy who held together their whole defensive line. Another like always finishing the play. He has a lot of natural power. He's like, you remember Red Bryant was like huge, but also you just couldn't move him because he was just very strong. Dwayne Carter reminds me of that, where you'll see guys where you're like, oh, that's Joe Alt. Oh, that's Joe Alt struggling to move Dwayne Carter. Joe Alt is very strong. You would see a number of plays like that. I think that he just lacks the speed profile to be a plus guy, but he's a really good fit for a 3-4.
What if I told you there's a really tall prospect with great athleticism scores, 37-inch arms, and that never produced anything in college at all?
I would ask if Mekhi Becton
Miles,
came back to college.
Miles Cole from Texas.
Oh, I don't. Yeah, I didn't. From I didn't
Texas
scout him.
Tech. He's, yeah,
37-inch arms. That's gross.
36 7/8 inch. His no athletic. Kidding. His 4.67 40, 1.65 10-yard, 35-inch vertical. This guy put up crazy numbers for his size, but he just never did anything in college, really. And he's also like 24 or something. This is the kind of guy. This is the kind of guy you bring in the last round, and you're like, maybe, just maybe, yeah, we can be the guy that helps this guy figure it out. Maybe we can help this guy learn how to play football. But it's just something to keep your eye on. I have this list of, like, just guys, crazy athletes, you know, that I have to put down, you know. Another one, Kevin, Jalix Hunt from Houston.
Jalix Hunt is a guy that I looked at a little bit too, because his athletic score was disgusting for his size.
Yeah, and do you know the Jalix Hunt story, Kevin?
I do not know the Jalix Hunt story. This sounds
okay.
Like a good.
You're gonna
I get
like
the 30
this.
For 30 on this?
What position do you think he played when he started his college career?
Let's see, 6'4", 252, quarterback.
He was a safety. This guy was a safety when he started in college, and now he's a defensive end, and he's kept. So here's the thing: he has kept adding muscle mass every year, and keeps getting bigger and bigger. And so a lot of people think like he's going to keep, well, if you've seen this guy, he's rocked up. He did not eat his way in it. I mean,
man, he just
protein powdered,
you know,
his way.
He likes food the way that we like food. And he just likes lifting the same amount he likes food. That's what this is.
He doesn't have
by his 10th year in the league. He's going to be a nose tackle.
I don't want to bring up the Athletic's butt article, but he doesn't have the the sand in his pants that you would want like a pass rusher, but he could be like a rotational DE, that core special teamer kind of guy that maybe develops into, you know, a 6-sack third down specialist. Like, that's the kind of thing I could see for Jalix Hunt. He's a phenomenal athlete. So, like, that's kind of where you try to get there. What do you think about Gabe Hall, Kevin, from Baylor?
He's large. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he can two gap enough for his size.
He also gets really high.
Yeah.
Like, to the point where it, like, if someone could just teach this guy
high
how
pad
to stay,
level, you guys get, come on, stay with it.
Yeah. Pad level. Sorry. But if someone could teach this guy just to, like, get low. I mean, he has the size, the length, the athleticism to really just be special. Remember, these are all like 5th, 6th, 7th round dart throws I'm bringing up here. Cedric Johnson, Mississippi.
Cedric Johnson's on my to be watch list.
Yeah.
I kind of went a different direction on the last couple guys.
He went one. He's a kind of one note, one speed. Okay. Give me the last couple, Kevin. And you finish us up now.
Okay. So just thinking about where we got coaches from, I went ahead and checked out the two guys out of Michigan, Braden McGregor and Jalen Harrell. Braden McGregor, I think, is interesting. He's a guy who could come in and help with the defensive install. He actually reminds me a lot of Tyreek Smith, which all of you Seahawks fans would know if he ever was able to see the field. As Ooh. A guy who, right? As a guy who has the versatile statistics that are like the athletic profile and everything that you want for like your fourth or fifth edge. I think he's a guy who could come in late and be helpful in that way. And Jalen Harrell, I think, is more of Jalen Harrell reminds me of a lot of guys at the back end of this draft that are difficult for me, because you look at their college production, everything, and you think that they're going to be a certain type of player. And then you look and you go, this guy can't move well enough laterally to play in the NFL at his weight. Mm-hmm. And that's just one of those general warnings I want to give people when you're watching, when you're looking up edges. If a guy's under about 255 pounds, he has to have the lateral movement to be able to slip tackles, because he's not going to be able to take on a guard or a tackle and like take on the block and defeat the block, unless we're already talking about him as like a first round guy. And so when you're looking at these later edges that are like 255 and under, And they probably have like sub 33 inch arms or right around 33 inch arms. And they might have the explosive numbers. They have a good first step. They have a good vertical. They have a good broad. They didn't do the three cone and they didn't do the shuttle because they know what the scores are going to be. And those scores are going to drop them down boards because they just don't have the lateral agility to really be able to hang and put together a set of moves that'll get them to the quarterback. They'll be the guy who's like always in the frame while the quarterback's making a big throw.
Yeah. All right, sweet. So, anything else before we head to the thanking all of our wonderful Patreons, Kevin? Do you got anything you want to throw in here?
Just that I think it's a really interesting edge and interior defensive line class, and there's a lot of guys in that like early day three, late day two category, right where we have a couple of picks. Because I think we pick at 81, 102, and 118, I believe. And I think all three of those spots are spots where logically one of these guys will be available that could really supplement our rotation. And I think you and I are both in agreement that a quality depth to your front seven rotation is a really key thing for having a successful team long term.
All right. Well, there are many ways to support the Seahawks Nest podcast. The best way to do so, patreon.com/Seahawks Nest for as little $1.24 a month. Join the Discord where you can bother me at all hours of the night. Thank you to those who support the show. Emmanuel, Andy, Brett, Cooper, do it all for the Tucci, Evan, Floctimus, Gavin, James, Jose, Joshua, Lucas, Malcolm, Ryan, Samuel, Terrence, Timothy, Tom, Warwolf, Astro, Blake, Bob, Carl, Casey, Cracksnacker, 420, Daniel, David, Feet Me on Rye, Foles, Jay, Luke, Michelle, Mike, Noah, Poops, Thomas, Brandon, Nick, Chip. All right. So today's movie club is going to be one where I'm going to surprise Kevin every single time I pick a movie. He's going to be like, wait, what? That counts? So just to let you guys in on like how kind of we come up with
chicken parmesan's not vegan.
some people think cucumber tastes better pickled. So let's we are going to do in honor of a movie releasing this week. What was it, Kevin? Can you remind me? Godzilla?
We're going to do
yes, and the new Godzilla
movie. In honor of the Ghostbusters movie that just released and the Godzilla movie that's about to release.
Godzilla Frozen Empire. We talked about what are movies that either revived or remakes over 10 years apart from the original. That's the kind of the line, arbitrary line I came up with. 10 years between the original thing. It could be a remake or a full-on series revival, your choice, but it has to be at least 10 years from the first one coming out. So do you want me to lead off? Because
why don't you go ahead and lead off?
I'm gonna lead off very strong, Kevin. You ready?
Yeah.
John Carpenter's The Thing.
That's a good one.
This was actually the third version of the story that came out. The Thing from Another World, 1951. Horror Express, 1972, starring Christopher Lee. And then, of course, the 1982 adaptation, The Thing.
Horror Express, I did not realize was part of that. That is news. The other one is one of my favorite little bits of trivia that everyone likes for movies.
Yeah, so The Thing is awesome. And it also is it also has like the best tweet about it, about movies ever, which is that someone was at a theater and they heard a wife talking to a husband, and the wife said, "Hey, why are they shooting at that dog?" And the guy responds with something like, I'm not 100%, I can't remember the exact quote, but it's like, this is a film where things happen and the plot will be revealed to you. Because it just reminds me, if you knew my wife, she just constantly asks me questions about a movie. And it's like, I'm watching it too. I know, I have received all of the same information that you have about this movie. Why would I know something that you don't? Especially if it's not like a franchise movie, you know, or like if we're just,
it's not a movie I've seen before. It's a movie we're both watching for the first time.
Right. We're watching the Lobster. Like, I don't know more about the Lobster than you do. I'm also confused about why this is happening. Like, please just try to explain. But I think the thing is an incredible movie, and is a remake / reboot that came out.
The Thing is exactly one of my top 10 years all time movies.
Yeah. So well, guess what? I'm putting a movie that's in my top 10 all time movies in on my next pick. So go ahead, hit me. Steal it right here. Unless you just rug pull me right out from under me, which would be awesome, by the way, because I think you like this movie as well.
I'm going to go with a movie that I am extremely fond of. That this movie, much like The Thing, was a much bigger success than the movie that it was theoretically a remake of. And that is Ocean's 11.
You did it! Son of a gun! That was my next movie! Oh, Ocean's 11's so good.
Ocean's 11 is one of the most watchable movies ever made. Like, this is one of those movies, if we were back in the cable days, where you could just pick it up at any point in the movie and be happy with your movie watching experience. The cast is excellent. The plot is excellent. But it executes the heist formula in a way that other movies should just follow because it does it perfectly. It's just a delightful movie. Brad Pitt eats so much.
Yeah, he certainly does.
The sibling rivalry.
I have to think now because Bernie Mac is so like, good in this movie. I was so sure that I was going to get that, and I was like, "All right,
I can do my second movie."
I just gotta think. I'm gonna go. Let's talk about Ocean's 11 more because I'm all zoned in.
What you want.
Ocean's 11 is one of my top. I'm really stingy with giving a movie 5 stars because I really want people to know that when I say something's a 5-star movie, it means like that it is goat. It's so good. I love it so much. So like I always tell people, like the line for me for a 5-star movie is has to be something that I would be willing to watch at any time over and over again, or it has to make me actually cry. Okay, like if it does not do either of those things, because if a movie makes me cry, I probably don't want to watch it again.
Because Nathan watching Schindler's List on repeat, that's a movie he'll watch anytime over and over.
I give Schindler's List 4.5. It's just bitterness. I like, why'd you put me through that? You know, I'm just mad. It was more like this is a 5-star movie, but I'm mad that I had to go through this. So 4.5 out of 5. Like 5 stars for Ocean's 11. I'd watch this movie like 1,000 times. I've seen all of the Ocean's movies a lot of times, except for Ocean's 8, which isn't even that bad. It just doesn't feel like
I kind of wish it was just a different movie.
The vibe was off.
The parts where they tried to connect it to everything else, I thought took away from the movie. I would agree.
Even Ocean's 12, everyone rags on Ocean's 12. First of all, it has the most funny, dumb scene I've ever seen in my entire life, where the guy puts on the music and break dances through the lasers. That is comedy gold. That's so funny. And then people think like, oh, well, that's a serious scene. You should be taking it serious. Dude, this movie is playing it off as comedy. Same with, oh, she looks just like the famous person. Yeah, it's supposed to be, it's a joke, guys. It's a joke. It's supposed to be funny. Like people are like, are they really seriously doing this? Yeah, they're really seriously doing this because it's a joke, guys.
I will say I like the movie less for that, but I think it gets ragged on way too much for it because it's still an absolutely delightful movie watching experience.
Let's go with Dune. I like the new Dune a lot more than the old Dune. I know there are like old Dune lovers, old Dune heads that love. Look, David Lynch is really great at set pieces, but man, that movie has just so many exposition dumps, and it's so.
Also, that movie is more Lynch than Dune.
Yes, Dune is not
to be known.
Dune is not supposed to feel like otherworldly. It's supposed to feel like people exploiting a planet, because no matter how much happens in human history, like inherently we do not change. We're inherently like a selfish. You know, that's like the lesson of Dune is like, hey, no matter what happens, even if we have magical powers and we are traveling the universe and all this stuff, we're still going to be huge jerks to each other.
Yeah,
that's Dune. And then the remake, I feel like, just kind of gets Dune a little bit more. Also, you guys know I'm a big Denis dude. So that's my pick there. All right, Kevin. Hit me. What's next?
Real quick, more on Dune. Denis Villeneuve has the cinematography of his movies is always top shelf. And the cinematography in Dune is absolutely gorgeous. There's these just beautiful shots of the planet that are built into these establishing shots, but it makes the planet feel like a character in a way that I think is so appropriate for the story. And I think that's just one of those things that you almost miss sometimes when you're watching it because there's so many other things to like that I think really brings the movie up another level.
Hey, also, I just want to say, like, going back to Ocean's Eleven, someone was talking to me the other day about, like, cinematography, and I was like, I love Soderbergh. I think it's because, like, he just does everything. He edits the movie. He shoots the movie. It's all him. It's just, like, one guy, singular vision. I don't know. There's something to that to me. All right. Hit me next. What's the...
Okay.
There's just it is getting more and more difficult.
I have so many movies that I'd still like to do.
There's I have about 10 that I feel like would be worthy, and I'm just gonna say if you pick like the wrong one here, I'm gonna judge you.
So I'm gonna go with There Was a Gap. This is not the greatest movie ever made.
Oh no!
But this is one of the movies I've laughed at the most of any movie.
Okay,
and that is 2012's 21 Jump Street, the sequel to the TV show.
Okay, all right.
Does it that really count?
Sure, it's fine.
Because if it doesn't count, funny. I have other ones.
It is funny. Like, that movie's really funny. And that it's also, like, the sequel's really funny as well.
Yes. And the sequel, just the way that that movie riffs on the entire TV genre and everything is so good.
Like, I am absolutely stunned you did not pick Dredd right here, though. I was like, here it comes. Kevin is picking Dredd.
My comfort movie?
And then it's his favorite movie. And that's why he's going to pick it. And then he did not. He don't. You know the thing that I would have picked, but the gap wasn't big enough?
What's that?
Heat. But the gap was only 6 years between the TV movie and the remake, the movie. Yeah. Okay. Other movies that I considered that I think about. Dredd, obviously. 310 to Yuma. Casino Royale.
Casino Royale was not a big enough gap.
Between Casino Royale and Casino Royale?
Oh, I thought you meant between Casino Royale and the previous Bond movie, yeah, because I would have had an issue with that.
The Fly,
yeah.
We got...
I'm surprised you didn't do one of the Apes movies. Fury Road. The Apes reboot, that was 10 years, wasn't it?
The War of the Worlds remake, which is underrated. You guys, watch it. It's not as
the
bad
Candyman
as you think
remake?
It's going to be. Candyman
which
remake, sorry.
Was good.
The thing is, It Part Two fumbled.
So
are we
going
It
Part One
hard.
To It Part One because that's the only part you want to watch.
Exactly, dude. It Part Two, what a bag fumble, dude. They had it. They had everything. It was just like in the palm of their hands. They had us all ready for like, oh, this is gonna be good. The casting was so good, and the movie was just so bad.
Mission Impossible, 1996's Mission Impossible.
Oh yeah, that's a good one. That's a good reboot. That's fun. We said Fury Road, right? Fury Road.
So I feel like the three that it comes down to for the last spot is Mad Max Fury Road, Blade Runner 2049, and Dredd.
What about Fistful of Dollars?
2014 Godzilla was good. Fistful of Dollars, that wasn't 10 years after.
Was it?
I don't think it was 20 years after Yojimbo. Oh, was it?
Wait, I'll look it up. But if it is, it's got to be in the mix.
And also, are we counting Sanjuro as?
Not. It's only 4 years after. What about Batman? Batman Begins. That was 10 years.
Was not 10 years after the previous Batman movie. I looked that one up too.
What was the previous Batman movie? Was
1997? It was Batman and Robin.
Ugh,
and it was like 2005.
Yuck.
Yep.
That's
yeah. Look that one up too. That was another one that was really tempting.
What a gross movie.
About the Apes movies? Was that 10 years?
I think it was, and I think that they are very good. But I would say they're not on the level of the movies we're talking about here.
So we have personally. Mad Max, Blade Runner, and Dredd. Uh-huh. We already have a Villeneuve movie, so I feel like we could just couch Blade Runner because we have.
I think it's got to be Mad Max. Like,
it's such a good movie.
Okay, other 10-year gaps that we didn't talk about though. Toy Story 3 is actually like a
that's
like
unbelievable.
A ten,
that
like
that
a 10-year gap
years.
between Toy Story 3 and Toy Story 2. That is like.
That's going to be over a decade between Inside Out and
the
sequel too. Now
the new Top Gun was good, and there was a big gap. Top Gun Maverick, the newest Scream reboot's not bad.
Yes.
The 2018 Tomb Raider I think is like low key underrated. That's something to think about. What about do you like the new Halloween? The new Halloween.
The first movie was promising, and it gets worse every movie.
Correct. That is exactly right. Star Trek.
The last movie was a friggin' mess.
Star Trek 2009, which I think
good
is
movie,
a
but one. I would argue that's kind of similar where it gets diminishing returns. Same reason we didn't bring up Star Trek.
Star Wars: The Force Awakens. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I think that's about right. We've got kind of all of the stuff here. I think I would stump hard for Mad Max though. I think it kind of brought action filmmaking back to prominence in a way that opened the door for like John Wick to be a 4-movie series that everyone gets excited about. Does that make sense? Like
yes.
It kind of allowed me to allowed you to dork out about action sequences and set pieces in a way that felt like it wasn't mainstream before that. It like mainstreamed the action genre again. And I will always appreciate that movie for that. Like, what other action movies are getting Academy Award nominations? Like, none.
Right.
And it should have won too. Let's be honest. If you look backwards at that, you're probably like, dang, Mad Max maybe should have been Best Picture. It was really, really good.
2016 Academy Awards.
Yeah. It was like really, really good. And didn't, I feel like it just, you know, probably didn't get votes because of genre. More than
the let's see,
because genre
best
film
picture was Spotlight. Ooh, Spotlight's really freaking good.
You love Spotlight. You and my wife, man, with the Spotlight.
Good movie.
It's okay. I don't like the accents. The accent work needs help, I think. Anyway, all right.
Then you really aren't allowed to like The Departed.
No, I don't. Well, okay, The Departed not a big enough gap. I looked it up, but. Between it and Infernal Affairs. There's some bad accents in that too, but Wahlberg's is not. Wahlberg's is the best because it's real. That's how he's
doing his job. What are you
that's
doing?
That's how he talks. That's if you meet Mark Wahlberg on the street.
One time he's not doing an accent.
He's not acting. Yeah, he's not acting. That's what he talks like.
It's the role he was born to do, the role where he plays a slightly racist smartass.
Did you know Mark Wahlberg's 40-day challenge is coming to an end soon?
Yes.
With Easter Sunday. Yep. All right, anyway.
Yeah, next weekend.
Okay, so it's Mad Max, and then Dredd is the honorable mention for Kevin, for Eric. We will see you next week. Go Hawks.